we're employing the best of breed technology and tools for you to use, and that will hopefully, you know, gain more aptitude to say, this is no longer the way I've perceived construction to be. This is the new wave of how we do things.
That was Cutler Knupp, Director of Disrupt Tech. Cutler is our guest for episode 10 of Innovate Jax, the podcast where we hear the stories of the creators, innovators, and entrepreneurs who will help elevate Jacksonville as a leading southeastern city of innovation. I'm your host, Kate Warnock. Now, on to the interview. Hi, everyone. This is Kate Warnock. I am so excited to have our next guest for Innovate Jax. He works for one of Jacksonville's legacy companies, and we're just thrilled to have him here, Cutler Knupp. Welcome.
Hey, Kate. Nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
All right. Well, Cutler, you know, you are the Director of Strategy and Technology Investments for the Haskell Company, but we're going to talk to you today about your other role, which is the Director of Disrupt Tech.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah,
for sure.
All right, so you and I had a chance to talk a little bit about this really fantastic new company. Why don't you go ahead and let's start right there. Tell us about Disrupt Tech and what you're here to do.
So I joined Haskell about a year and a half ago or so, and I joined specifically right as they were starting their corporate venture capital group. So what a corporate venture capital group is, an internal organization inside the existing Haskell entity. Separate entity for several reasons, but the main focus of it is to make investments on behalf of the organization in new and emerging technologies in the space that can benefit the organization both strategically and financially.
Okay, and the Haskell Company, for folks who may not be familiar with that brand, you know, what is Haskell? What is that company's background?
Haskell is definitely a Jacksonville staple. 50-plus-year-old design build group based out of Jacksonville, Florida, founded by Preston Haskell, a longtime Jacksonville native. And basically what Haskell does is we design, build projects, large industrial projects for customers globally. So it kind of varies from CPG, industrial type facilities, distribution centers, manufacturing plants, all the way to hospitals, lots of healthcare work, to military applications as well. Do work with the Coast Guard, kind of name it. We've been there, done it, including even building what is TIA Bank Field downtown, et cetera. So a lot of Jacksonville infrastructure was built by Haskell. So it's kind of neat being being a part of the organization that had a lot to do with kind of a lot of the founding of the infrastructure for Jacksonville.
Let's talk about the companies that you look to possibly fund. You know, tell us what makes a great match.
What's unique about Disrupt Tech is, in the industry as a whole, in architecture, engineering, construction, which is the space that Haskell plays in, there's basically been a lack of productivity gains from the introduction of technology back in, you know, 70s, 80s. And it really became apparent from a study that was released several years ago by a large consulting firm, McKinsey. And what McKinsey highlighted was basically with the advances in technology and data and mobile applications and workflows and industry as a whole, construction has really lagged to keep pace with that. And so pretty much the industry as a whole wound up at the bottom next to agriculture and hunting. So considering how large the industry is as a whole, you're over $10 trillion globally from the industry, and lots of opportunities to improve upon that. And historically as well, relatively low margin business as a whole, at least from the general contractor architecture perspective. And so there's been sort of a resistance to invest, especially venture money, in the space to develop these new technologies that can, you know, help the industry as a whole. And so what's happened is there's been a surge in venture capital money entering the space, and which has led to a lot of new technologies arising that are helping to drive the industry into kind of its next evolution. So we've seen how industries have been affected by digital transformation over the years. You know, retail is probably the most recent, financial services, et cetera, and construction is kind of entering. We're in the first few innings of it, but that's kind of what we're in right now. So we're focused on investing in technologies that impact the way we're running our projects, all the way from the design to the collaboration to the actual build on site. And so this is how we build. This is the technologies that we use to build and collaborate with, you know, the owners, our project teams, and our subcontractors in the field.
So I want to hear about both the technology and the, you know, the kinds of innovations you're seeing. But, you know, are you looking for companies that you can feed back into the Haskell enterprise? Is that, you know, part of the criteria for the companies that you vet, you know, that they would offer a solution that you're actively seeking a solution for from the Haskell perspective? Or is it you're just there to help the industry grow and give a leg up to construction and engineering and architecture?
The core and most, the premise of every investment that we're considering and most every technology that we're looking at piloting has some direct impact on our business. So that's one of kind of the key, one of the first gates that we have to go through when we're evaluating an opportunity is saying, is this something that Haskell would be able to leverage in our enterprise as us being a customer or our customers being a customer of that technology? And that's kind of the first application that we go through for it. So 100% we try to focus, you know, on what we know as well. So and we're able to kind of demonstrate and understand through running pilots or small tests of the technology internally with our enterprise to say, hey, this is working or this isn't working. And that's kind of a good, obviously, stage gate if we want to continue to explore a larger adoption of the technology or potential investment, whatever it may be.
So you mentioned the report that came out in 2015, and it just, or was it 16?
I believe, yeah, 2015.
2015, you know, that there was all this opportunity for technology to really kind of disrupt the construction industry. What are the problems that you think technology will help solve?
Well, there's a lot. I mean, really the impacts, it spreads across the entire value chain. So what's another thing that's kind of unique to construction, which is, you know, it's such a necessary means to the end. But basically, there's a few areas where we as Haskell and DisruptTech see lots of opportunity around. And one of the, you know, the first one that comes to mind is safety. So as a whole, the industry, we employ around 10% of the workforce, but we're responsible, construction as a whole, not Haskell, is responsible for 20% of the fatalities in the workforce. So that's kind of a pretty alarming statistic when you look at the numbers of that, and understanding that at the end of the day, what's most important is keeping our people safe and everybody that's, you know, on our project safe. So there's lots of opportunities around safety and understanding work habits and making sure, you know, people are accredited to be doing the type of work that they're doing, and in general, just monitoring their health and also making sure that we're, you know, taking, you know, we're leveraging everything we can to keep our people safe. The others would be around, obviously, where we can automate those jobs that are what a lot of people in the industry refer to as dull, dirty, and dangerous. So leveraging technologies to improve those types of activities on the job site, so you're not having to any longer either put a human in harm's way for that or for those type of jobs that you can, you know, employ some sort of automation, robotics alike. So, and then obviously anything to do with data collection. So since most of the time when you're building in a, you know, what can be very remote areas. A lot of times the infrastructure that you're building up is somewhere where there's not a lot of connectivity. You also don't have any existing infrastructure as you're building the actual building that you're working out of from the ground up, in a lot of cases from a greenfield engagements. And so what kind of makes it unique is that there's not a really great way, or hasn't been historically, to collect the data and understand the progress of what's happening in the field, except for using human resources to go out and track all of that, especially from the connectivity perspective. So what we're able to do with some of the new technologies is understand that we can now relatively easily be able to employ an area of connectivity. So we can use more solutions there, whether it's mobile or whatever the technology might leverage, sensors, et cetera. And then from there, we can collect and use the data that we're able to pull from the field and from the project to make more appropriate insights to what's going on the project.
Well, I'm really glad I asked that question, because my assumption was going to be you're going to throw out 3D printing, you know, and that's something we've heard about certainly in other fields, but it sounds
Which is exciting, and there's some cool stuff going on in 3D printing, no doubt.
For sure, but it sounds like you're you know, the job site safety and you know, and the connectivity things. Are these novel technologies that are unique to construction, or are you seeing adaptations of technology, you know, from other fields coming over to construction and being applied in a new and different way?
As I mentioned before, the venture investment that's coming into the space. So in 2017, it was like 320 $20, $30 million in venture investment. And then as of 2018, it was over $1 billion, $1.3 billion. And so there's more aptitude for people to be exploring the space. So what I'm seeing is that there is spillover from other industries. There's also a lot of founders that are coming from outside the construction engineering architecture world, and they're saying, oh, hey, I've had a successful startup in Silicon Valley, sold it to a large enterprise, made a ton of money. What's my next move? Oh, this is the next kind of hot spot. Maybe I should check it out. So they're trying to bring some applications into the space. And in certain situations, that's good because it's an outside perspective. However, there's also what we're seeing is there's also just as many challenges of that with people coming in with a rather
naive
mindset, exactly, of, you know, oh, it's construction. Like, how hard could it be? And then they're kind of quickly introduced to this age-old beast that's been, you know, in industry since the beginning of time, that is construction. And it's complex and it's very fragmented as an industry as a whole. There's lots of parties, you know, sometimes hundreds, if not thousands of different entities working on one project to get one building built. So it's a lot of coordination. It's very complex. And so sometimes those outsiders don't have a good of a understanding of the industry. So they kind of miss the mark. They have good intentions, but not necessarily the execution and where they're finding the fit doesn't necessarily, you know, align there. There's also opportunities where we do see good overlap and some flow from other technologies that have seen success. Is in, actually, of all places, defense and military applications. So they face a lot of the same challenges of having to operate in remote areas, being very connectivity denied, you know, areas, and also unpredictable terrain, and then also using, you know, a lot of resources that need to be, you know, managed and, you know, collecting data in the field. So we see some really, really interesting defense applications that are coming over and becoming commercialized that we're able to leverage in the business, which is exciting.
I would think that personal safety too, you were talking about job site safety, obviously the military has that same concern. So are you seeing a lot of wearables move into the construction space, or, you know, I'm just trying to get a sense of, you know, what's going to really help to modernize and take that job site to the next level?
100%, yeah, so you nailed it. I mean, it's a lot of the wearables, so anything that you would put on a infantry soldier that you want to be able to track his status of where he is, you know, is he meeting his waypoints? Is he, what's his health status? What's his morale? Is he wounded? Things of that nature. That's a big hotspot about being like, we can employ a lot of that technology in more simple applications today, just to understand, hey, you know, Joe Smith's on the job site today. Here's where he's working today. You know, here's kind of levels of productivity. You can even tell, you know, everything up to like, you know, moods and morale, hydration, things along those lines. And also you have a connected line to every person on the job site. So if there's something that happens, if there's an incident where you need to evacuate the job site, you can kind of send out a notification rapidly to let everybody know that, you know, they need to, you know, evacuate the job site for whatever reason, things along those lines. That's really interesting. And we're finding more and more of those applications. It can be as simple as something that you can run through, you know, an Apple Watch or just a wearable of some sort, or they just put a sensor on a hard hat or on your belt, something along those lines. You put accelerometers in them so you can tell if it'll trigger an alert if someone is to fall or something along those lines. So all of that really kind of plays into it. But yeah, absolutely.
So Cutler, if that's the technology that you're looking at, are there any job sites around here in Jacksonville that have this tech in place? Or, you know, where are we still kind of at that early age of still exploring what the tech is?
There's lots of applications specific to Haskell. We have a couple sites here locally to Jacksonville and kind of the region that we're deploying some of the stuff at, which is pretty exciting. Everything, even including robotics, which is pretty neat as well. So, yeah.
And how's it being received out there in the real world?
It's being received very positively. So the industry as a whole, everybody knows that we need this and it's way overdue. So the industry is receiving it very well. All of our customers are asking for this as well. So, you know, how are we different from, you know, from our competitors, and why they should work with Haskell? And it's because of our innovative mindset when we're literally looking at everything involving a project to understand where we can drive productivity gains, where we can drive opportunities to be safer, et cetera. So, and then they have clients in turn like it as well, because their projects are getting delivered on time, if not faster, you know, for cheaper, and, you know, they don't have any hiccups along the way. So
It sounds like every
chasing utopia.
Yeah, really. It's the dream of, you know, anyone who's ever gone through a house renovation, for example. I can only imagine the scale and the magnitude of the concerns on a commercial job site. Let's talk a little bit. You used a phrase that I kind of want to key in on. The jobs that are, what is it, dirty, boring,
dull, dirty, and dangerous.
Dull, dirty, and dangerous. So, you know, obviously that doesn't sound very appealing, but that also might equate to an automated job used to be someone's paying job, possibly. If it's being well received in the field, how about reskilling? You know, is that something that you think people who are involved right now in the construction industry, or maybe tomorrow's construction workers and engineering and architecture, because I know those are the other fields that you touch on, is this going to require, you know, going back to school and learning how to use this tech? And if so, how is Jacksonville doing in supporting that need?
You definitely hit on a hot button topic. So as soon as you start mentioning, you know, automation or robotics, you know, everybody's like, oh, they're taking my job. I have a slightly different viewpoint that I think that's more or less an evolution of work. And the idea is that, take drywall, for example. So drywall subcontractors are they're in very high demand. So they're relatively challenging to find from time to time. They're expensive, and also the actual job itself is really not that glamorous. So it's definitely hazardous to your health. It's very exhaustive and strenuous kind of labor. So if you can have an individual overseeing a robot be able to finish your drywall to a better quality in half the time, why wouldn't you want to, you know, employ that? Even if you are a drywall subcontractor, you know, there's more incentive for you to do that, and you're making better use of your crews. The labor is, you know, is big there too. So, and to your point about retooling, there's definitely a lot of that needs to be done. There's kind of other headwinds in the industry as well, with the labor shortage that specific to construction is facing. So in 2008, there was a big exodus of workers from the construction industry due to the downturn, and they have not re-entered the workforce. They found other opportunities. And so basically there's a shortage of workers, so we need younger talent. The average age in the industry is like 42 years old, which is pretty significant. And so there's definitely large gaps from the labor perspective that we have to understand where those are going to come from. And so a lot of it's retooling, but also it's more or less positioning your organization, the type of work for the new hires that you're going to be retaining out of school, to show them that this is no longer your father's or your grandfather's construction industry and, you know, organization that you want to come work for. Like, you know, we're employing the best of breed technology and tools for you to use. And that will hopefully, you know, gain, you know, more aptitude to say, this is no longer the way I've perceived construction to be. This is kind of the new wave of how we do things. So it's slightly retooling, but it's also there's a new generation that's having to enter the workforce. So retooling is almost exiting, in a sense. There's some of that, but it's really that younger generation that's already used to using mobile and technologies in their job, and they almost anticipate it because they've grown up on it. So it's not as foreign. So there's some retooling, but for the most part, when we're deploying something in the field, especially from a mobile perspective, as long as it's not really complex and we can kind of easily show the time savings that, you know, the individuals are going to have pretty quickly to adopt it.
So it's a whole new draw to come back into 100%. The industry. If it wasn't something that was competitive before, it sounds like with this technology, it's definitely kind of adding that appeal back into it. You know, I wonder too, I know we talk about, or we've heard about the infrastructure issues that are across the nation, you know, the crumbling infrastructure of America, and bridges are collapsing, and all of these things that are kind of, you know, need to really be addressed. Do you think that technology and, you know, is that going to be the solution? Is that how we're going to fix that massive problem?
It's going to be part of it. I mean, there's that's a big question to unpack, but I mean, there's a lot to that. Can't remember the exact, so I won't quote it here, but basically the gist is we're going to have to build more in the next 10 years than we have in the past 50. just to support growth that's kind of across, you know, residential and commercial and infrastructure. So, you know, it's growing populations, it's aging populations, it's just changes in demographic, and obviously the aging infrastructure is a big piece of it as well. So enabling autonomous site work is going to be big, you know, especially for road and infrastructure construction, new ways of deploying robotics for rebar and how you cast concrete, build bridges, et cetera. So all of that really comes into play. And then we're just now seeing some exciting developments on the materials front as well that are kind of getting ready for prime time, which is going to be really kind of revolutionary and game changing as well. Because everybody's really, this is another topic probably for another day, but around, you know, you build a building and you anticipate its lifespan to be between 50 and 70 years, something like that. And no one really thinks about what happens after you. You know, you have to either repurpose the building, or, you know, you have to either raise it and, you know, build new again. But what happens to all those materials? You know, what's the impact of that on the environment, et cetera? So it really kind of runs the gamut. You can see that with what's going on downtown with, you know, a lot of the decommissioning of some of the old facilities, you know, in the Jacksonville area locally here. So
I wonder, too, if with these new materials, are they going to be designed with health in mind, so that should they need to be repurposed or a wall knocked down, there's not asbestos being floating or in the air, or are they, you know, the toxic chemicals that we continue to hear about, you know, when buildings collapse or released and creates a huge issue for the environment. Is that being addressed?
It is. Right now, it's, I wouldn't say it's probably at the top. For some organizations, it is. For us, we always take a sustainable approach to building and understanding the materials that we're using and how they may be repurposed one day in the future as well. So there's more and more of a growing awareness kind of across the board globally, and here in the U.S. for sure as well. I think abroad, they're still just focused on how they can, you know, continue to scale up their infrastructure needs and whatnot. But here in the U.S., it definitely is a conscious mind to understand how we can continue to build and use, you know, more green materials and have less impact on the environment.
You know, and Cutler, I wonder too, how does the U.S. rank as far as, you know, being innovators in those new material development and new ways of, you know, deploying engineering and architecture? Are we kind of at the top there, or, you know, is there a country that's really kind of far ahead and we're racing to catch up?
That kind of brings me to another point. So, I mean, from Haskell being kind of an innovator at our core when we first founded, Preston Haskell, the founder, who's still in the business today, was one of the pioneers of the design build model. So prior to him really coming on and driving adoption of that model, it was, you would have an architect that would design it, you would have an engineer kind of work out all the details, and you have a builder that would come and build the building. But he really kind of forced this integrated design with it. So innovation has really kind of always been at Haskell's core. As far as from the US, that model is now sort of relatively commonplace, design build. Definitely a good way to run the project, depending on, you know, the type of engagement. But as far as from where the U.S. as a whole kind of sits, we're actually somewhat behind the rest of the world. And an example of that, which is an area that we are focused on as well, is how to incorporate modular and prefab building into what we do today. So Haskell doesn't do any sort of real large high rises or residential apartments or condo buildings, anything like that. So there's been some modular in that type of space where you basically have boxes and you stack them on top of each other, and then you've got, you know, your hotel or whatnot. So you've seen some of these projects, large projects in New York, et cetera, popping up doing this type of work. Where we're trying to take that modular approach is in healthcare and some of the other more challenging use cases that we have for bringing and being able to deliver a high quality product in a short amount of time, maybe even in some very remote, hard to reach areas globally, where you can modularize the approach. So you have these volumetric type completely finished pieces of a building. You're able to put them together, you put some facade on the exterior, and then you have your building. So the time to, you know, you're doing most of your constructing actually in a facility, which is kind of exciting. And so that's an example of where here in the U.S., I think less than 4% of building is done through a modular approach. When in Europe, it's much, much higher than that. And so, you know, I think there's some theories behind it, whether it's that there was kind of resource constrained or there's different types of building that
codes,
you're having to. That plays into it. But definitely Europe would be, you know, way further ahead than the U.S. from that perspective, and even in Asia. So U.S. is just kind of catching on to that. I think with the edge that the U.S. has is, It's a very good environment for investors to come in and make these sort of venture bets, and also just for deploying a lot of the technology. It's easier in the United States than in some places globally. So we're able to, I think we're going to quickly catch up to where the rest of the world is in those certain places where we've fallen behind.
So Cutler, with DisruptTech, I'm wondering, you know, you have this gorgeous building right there on Riverside Avenue, and you mentioned something about you have an innovation center in Atlanta, is it?
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us more about that?
We kind of been jumping around, but I mean, DisruptTech's mission is to invest, invent, and innovate. So basically kind of those three pillars. So we're investing, we're piloting technologies, we're investing in these new ways of building today. We are inventing. So what we do is we have an R&D center in Atlanta that you just mentioned. And where this focuses is mainly on our engineering practice, specific to a lot of our industrial clients that are producing widgets of sorts or any sort of consumer product good. And basically they have workflows inside their facility. So we will design the facility, we'll build the facility, but we will also help to consult and develop really end to end. So raw product coming in the door all the way to packaged on a pallet out the door. And so helping them with everything in between. And there's a lot of unique challenges on the engineering side on how you run a manufacturing facility. That we're able to help consult on. And what happens once we dig into customer-centric problems in that space, we're able to have this R&D center in Atlanta where we go and we'll actually explore, vet, work with universities in a real makerspace type fashion to come up with solutions for them. So we've had a couple of interesting solutions that have been customer-driven that we've actually solved and we're able to bring to market, which is pretty neat. So.
Well, so that's so exciting. The reason why I bring this up, you know, at this end of the conversation is as you were talking about Europe and how they're so far ahead, it definitely sounds like Haskell's positioned itself to kind of being on that point of innovation here in the United States. And I was wondering if is part of your mission to kind of help lead that charge, to help advance the technology and the adoption of that technology and the new solutions that you just said, you know, even if it's a makerspace sort of situation. Are you kind of broadcasting that message, or is it right now just more focused on Haskell's clients and that sort of universe?
We're relatively early in the journey, so like I mentioned, so we're not really even 2 years in. So right now it's been a lot of focusing on Haskell folks and our customers specifically. And then we're working with universities. We're starting to broaden the net about how we kind of further expand. But everything we do has a dramatic impact on not only just like the local communities that we're working in, but also the university systems and some of the technology that we're working to develop internally that's proprietary to Haskell will have impacts, you know, much further outside of just our organization.
Let's spend a minute or two just talking about that university connection, because part of, you know, Innovate Jax's mission is to really help connect the dots and help our local community know, you know, what amazing technology and you know, entrepreneurs are doing here, as well as what the opportunity might be in the future. So it sounds to me, if you're working with universities, you know, let's hear about that and see what might be appealing to our listeners that they might one day want to engage with.
We're continuing to kind of build and, you know, continue to enhance our relationships here kind of in the local market to Jacksonville. So all the universities here that you would think of, the UNF, JU's, the world. So this spans from, you know, hiring people that are directly on my team from some of these universities, working very closely with other professors and faculty of these universities here locally to not only come in and be able to talk to their students about the opportunities and about this new frontier that's happening in the industry that they're interested in, specific to their major or whatever it may be, all the way to the University of Florida's of the world, the reach. A lot of my network is in Atlanta. We have Haskell has a pretty good footprint in the city as well. So Kennesaw State's, Georgia Tech's of the world, a lot of the leading research institutions, and then all the way out to the Stanford's of the world as well. So it really kind of runs the gamut. I mean, a lot of times how we're partnering with them is, you know, we're obviously forging good relationships because we want to get the message out about what Haskell is doing with DisruptTech specifically and how that will apply to the students that are, again, interested in entering the industry, but also for leveraging the university's research capabilities and understanding of some of these more cutting edge technologies that we're looking at leveraging in the space to solve problems that haven't been solved for yet.
That's really exciting. So, you know, to close this out, let's talk about, you know, Haskell, as you mentioned, has been in our city since the 60s, is it?
Yes.
1960s. Yep. So here we are knocking on 2020's door. What's your vision, you know, long-term vision for where Haskell's going to be?
Continuing to keep Jacksonville front and center. So more exciting stuff to come on that front. And, you know, we're really doubling down on what's happening here in Jacksonville and the long-term play that Jacksonville is experiencing here specifically. And, you know, we have ambitious growth plans that we're tackling right now, as far as from our perspective of, you know, doubling in our size, et cetera. We've done a crazy amount of hiring just in the past year, just to fulfill for the demand that we have in the pipeline today, which is great. So really, yeah, just doubling down on our relationship here with Jacksonville as a whole, and making sure to maintain that. So there's a lot of exciting stuff that's happening here in Jacksonville, as far as from, you know, my local impact with my team and Disrupt Tech, what we're doing. So we work on a lot of kind of special projects internally as well. So whether it's working with other firms here locally, if we're looking for some technical expertise to develop an application for us or whatever it may be, we always try to source kind of here locally, along with, like I mentioned, you know, kind of most of my team kind of grew up out of University of Florida or JU, UNF, et cetera. So it's really kind of keeping it close to home, so to speak. So, and there's lots of great opportunity here. I mean, I know we didn't really touch much on kind of what's happening in Jacksonville, but it's definitely a very exciting time, and interested to see kind of the next, you know, the next 10 years are going to look very different than the past 10 from what I'm seeing.
You know, well, you had on your LinkedIn profile, you know, your description for your role as the director at Disrupt Tech is that you invest in founders who are changing the future of the built world. That's a pretty ambitious and bold statement, but how exciting that you're right here in Jacksonville, and it sounds like Haskell definitely has plans to you know, broaden that footprint and have an even greater impact on our city.
And there's a lot of cool companies here locally too that are interesting for your listeners. Company called Apellix. They're good friends of ours, so I'll give them a quick shout out. And
feel free. Tick off the ones that you're able to highlight. We'd love to hear about.
Yeah, no, for sure. So that just one that I'll call out, but they basically have a patent on a tethered drone. So a drone that has a consistent connection to a power source in the ground, also the ability to, you know, whatever else you can do with that. So you could feed paint through it, et cetera. So they have a patent on a tethered drone for a painting application. So they're doing some pretty exciting stuff, and that's just kind of right here in the backyard. There's a lot of interesting technology kind of focused on military applications that's coming from the area. And that's just here locally in Jacksonville. Florida as a whole has some really, really good opportunities around that as well. Kind of in the water, wastewater space, and some interesting technologies that are coming up from that front, which we're seeing as well. So definitely some cool stuff right here in our backyard.
And the company was Apellix? Was the tethered drone technology.
Yep.
And are you using those right now on job sites, or are they still, exploring its use case?
Yeah, absolutely. So so they are kind of finally getting to where they're a commercially viable solution. So we've done some pilots and whatnot together, but nothing on like a industrial scale yet. So, but they're definitely on that path.
And being the military city that we are, was there any particular company that you're interested in or that's doing something really novel?
There's a few. I just unfortunately can't discuss just due to some non-disclosures.
Okay. All right. But good to know that they're here.
For sure.
And are they companies that were based here in Jacksonville, or are they folks that moved here because of the opportunity?
The one that I'm thinking of was based here, and there's another that relocated due to kind of talent and opportunity purposes. So I think that there's more and more of a growing awareness that, you know, the technical skill sets you don't have to do a whole lot of convincing to sell somebody. You just have to bring them down here and kind of show them what they've got. And you're like, you know, you have access to, you know, all this beautiful outdoor amenities here. You've got golf 365, you know, you've got access to the beach, the river, and sunshine, you know, whatever, 200 and something days out of the year. So it's not hard to convince them not to move to Chicago, you know, that kind of deal. So so we're seeing a lot of that. And affordability for the city as a whole is another big draw that we're kind of seeing from some of these younger companies that are a little bit more bootstrapped, or they have raised venture funding. So they can pay well, but, you know, understanding that they have to, you know, be very strategic in how they acquire their talent. So they find some value for being in a city like Jacksonville.
Absolutely. Because I was going to say, too, the talent pool here with our universities, you know, where we have a lot of talent to offer. And it's exciting to hear about these new opportunities for that talent to go to.
Yep. 100%.
Yeah. All right. Well, Cutler Knopp, thank you so much for sharing all of this information about DisruptTech. I'll make sure that we have the link to your website on our show notes, and appreciate you coming today.
That's great. Thank you so much, Kate. It's a pleasure.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Innovate Jax. For show notes and a list of all our episodes, go to Furkura.com/InnovateJax. Know a Jacksonville changemaker who'd make a great podcast guest? We want to hear from you. Message us at InnovateJax@Furkura.com. Thanks for listening.